Hello, listeners. It's Edi again, and welcome back to part two of our interview with Dr. Arnfield and Dr. Prager. In today's episode, we're going to build on our discussion from last time and look deeper into the obstacles around the implementation of AI. This will definitely be an interesting episode as we discuss pertinent issues such as patient and physician reluctance and ethics revolving around AI in medicine. Let's get right into it.
I want to actually touch upon the bedside application of POCUS. So, as exciting as this implementation of AI can be, I imagine there must be hesitation among some doctors. Do you feel that there's a pushback towards this technology or has been welcomed with open arms?
Yeah, great question. You know, you hear rumors, you hear rumblings, there's some pushback. I think generative AI in particular has brought this conversation to the forefront. What does AI mean for the future of medicine? From a AI-assisted diagnostic imaging technology, I really haven't felt this pushback. And I think clinicians are wanting a solution that reduces their cognitive burden and increases their confidence. This is something that isn't ever designed to replace the clinician, but really just to augment them. And so I certainly haven't felt that there's been any pushback towards the idea of automating point-of-care ultrasound. And there's been other works by other companies and other research groups to automate other components of point-of-care ultrasound. And those have been received with open arms because ultimately, physicians, clinicians, we're busy. If there's something that we can do that allows us to achieve the same result with more confidence, with better accuracy, that enhances the care for our patients, I think we're all for it. And I think ultimately that's our goal here at DeepBreathe, is to improve patient care with these technologies. And I think everyone on the front line can get behind that.
Yeah, so I would agree with everything Ross has said. And I would say that there's, I think my observation is that two things. One is that some AI groups will automate things that we don't want automated, either because we're cognitively reject the notion that they should be machine level decisions. So there's been a lot of friction with early warning systems, which are basically systems that digest inpatient information, whether it's lab values, vital signs, and then try to alert us to the pending deterioration of those patients. And they're plagued by a number of false positives that then create a lot of additional work. And so a lot of clinicians and nurses and others may reject or struggle with those systems. And the neat thing about the AI, however, is that we can learn from those friction-filled experiences and we can dial back the sensitivity or dial up the sensitivity, almost like being able to change a laboratory assay in real time where the thresholds for positivity and negativity actually can change. So we're entering a whole area of digital medicine now that said pushback might actually just be forms of feedback about how to harmonize AI with the clinical ecosystem. And that will change, as for all the reasons like you're in second year talking about artificial intelligence. And whereas I was in second year and I was learning how many leeches are supposed to be applied for a case of quinsy or some other prehistoric concept. And so, you know, that, and our delta is about 20 years, mine and yours. So you can imagine where 20 years things are going to be with this. The other thing I'll just say quickly is that I think physicians and the overall clinical world is very happy to have normal findings automated, as Ross already alluded to through his ECG analogy. I think when it comes time to diagnosing very serious conditions, people, including patients and providers, are going to, again, want hands on the wheel for that kind of stuff. When you're going through the construction zones or the high traffic areas, you want full vigilance. But when it's smooth sailing, nothing to see here, normal ECG, normal lung ultrasound, we'll be very happy to see that fully automated because no one gets excited quite as much about the normal case as they do about the pathological case, which requires a lot more cognitive input, guidance, and sort of direction from the clinical team.
Yeah, so I think we're all on the same page here about AI not, I guess, taking over the job of doctors, but rather making them more efficient, you know, being able to do more cases with a higher accuracy. But I feel like there's also obviously those articles online that you see every once in a while about AI passing medical exams or board exams and this kind of myth that, you know, AI is going to take over the job of the doctors. So I was just wondering, as AI becomes more integrated into medical imaging, and we kind of did touch upon this already, but how do you see the role of healthcare professionals changing? And we talked about efficiency. I think, does that seem like the biggest advantage of this AI?
I have some specific thoughts on that, and it's a good question. And this has been true since the dawn of the information superhighway, now known as the internet, which I expect you've heard of. It's a series of tubes interconnected. Because as soon as, you know, medical information, not even talking about AI, but became relatively available to everybody, our secret sort of you know, Merck manuals or Harrison's internal medicine volumes that the lay public would never purchase and never be able to comprehend because it would be hidden and buried under medical jargon. As soon as that medical information became available to the public, the leverage that we held largely over patients, and I don't mean that in a malicious sense, but the leverage of the information gap narrowed. And there was a lot of friction with that. Some physicians still, I think, harbor a degree of resentment when patients are overly informed or overly research their own conditions, which obviously is absurd and in many ways, and is an ego issue rather than actually realizing you're just conspiring with the patient to solve their problems together. And so large language models like ChatGPT, passing board exams, is just yet another incredible step towards that, that signals that physicians may not, it's not 1950 anymore, and we don't have this monopoly on the information. But what we do have a monopoly on or are devoted to is medical experience and walking alongside of patients and being with patients cognitively, empathically, and procedurally, things that are that sort of trifecta together are difficult to replicate with AI. So it is yet another ego blow for those of us who pride ourselves on being the smartest person in the room, and I'm a doctor and I'm so smart. And for sure, white collar professional level services are all going to be under heavy fire because of the democratization of this knowledge base. And so the question is back to us, what are we going to do to differentiate ourselves, recognizing we are not the smartest person in the room anymore, but we may be the most caring, we may be the most interested in advancing the case forward and caring for the patient in ways that they can't. They say, well, ChatGPT told me I have this rare disorder. What do you think, doctor? And you're like, well, that's probably right. I've seen 20 cases of that. Let me tell you how this is going to go. And that's what no large language model can tell you. The downside is that presents, I think, a real challenge as a medical student, because you don't have experience to offer. And now the knowledge you are claiming to offer that used to be by the end of first year, you could go home and talk to your family at, like, you know, Christmas dinner or Thanksgiving dinner or whatever, and you could flex all your knowledge, and they'd be like, yeah, whatever now, because there's no longer kind of a delta there. And so what is it that you bring to the table? So I think it's going to be harder for early trainees, more so than, you know, gray-haired people like me who can offer experience, and that's the secret sauce that's going to keep us alive. But how do you bridge that chasm in the age of AI and large language models, I think, is going to be the question. And that's, again, a question for the not-so-agile medical schools and universities in general to figure out, as knowledge is no longer as salient an offering for high tuition as it once was.
I'm really interested to see how AI becomes a tool for clinicians in these upcoming years. And along this topic of AI and medical imaging, I think we haven't really touched upon, like, I guess, the question of ethics and patient confidentiality. So I was wondering if this has ever even been a problem with DeepBreathe. Are there regulatory committees that kind of oversee the implementation of AI in healthcare? And do you need to work alongside with them? Or if you guys could just describe that process a bit as well.
Yeah, great question. I think the concern, one of the big concerns with AI is confidentiality, is using ethically responsibly. But I think it's important to distinguish AI a little bit. You know what, there's different intents of AI. So one of them is the predictive component, which I think DeepBreathe would fall into, where we're really trying to predict the presence of a disease process. Then that moves into that other realm, which is the generative, or creating new content. I think a lot of the ethical discussion surrounding AI really comes in for the generative component of AI, where you're creating things from the data set that it's been trained in, and are you attributing the original author that fed that model? How do you deal with copyright issues there? Because if you're presenting it as your own work, it isn't your own work. It is this AI model that is using other people's works to generate new content. It's not actually creating de novo things that have never been thought of in the universe. It's using predictive algorithms to produce new content. I certainly see ethical implications with that. Certainly with DeepBreathe, we're not using generative AI. We are using AI in a very predictive capacity, training large data sets with expert clips that have been annotated, and using that to actually predict the presence or absence of pathology. The data sets we're using are anonymized. Ethics approval has been done throughout the entire process here. So certainly we're adhering to the ethical standards that are required at the institution. But I understand why, in general, with AI, there is this concern about potential ethics. So great question about the regulatory committee as well. Certainly we're working with Health Canada and the FDA to ensure that our technology is being developed, but then also implemented with the kind of strictest ethical and safety standards, because there are considerations surrounding AI-assisted technologies, who's responsible for the false positives and the false negatives. And that's part of the development process that we're working with these regulatory authorities for, to ensure that this is being done in a transparent, safe, and evidence-based fashion.
Yeah, and I really like that part you add about how, like, because to train these machines, you have to use, I guess, hundreds or thousands of images. And it's nice to, I guess, for those who are worried, it's nice to know that those patient images are anonymized and without any personal information.
Absolutely, yeah.
So to end off on a positive note, looking into the future, what would you say excites you most about AI and medical imaging and healthcare in general?
I think what excites me most right now about AI and point-of-care ultrasound is the ability that AI will have to democratize POCUS use throughout the world. No longer is the expertise required to implement POCUS something that only ivory tower academic institution holds, but it's something that we can apply throughout Canada, throughout the world, to enhance patient care by non-physician providers as well. And I think that this has been something that traditionally has been lacking with point-of-care ultrasound, because it takes tremendous resources to train and mentor and supervise ongoing POCUS development. You can't just take a one-day course and then be a POCUS expert. That mentorship is not available. And I hope that with AI-assisted technologies, we can enhance clinician skill sets throughout the world such that this can be applied at the bedside as that extension of the physical exam that we talked about, really on a global scale to change the lives for patients around the world.
Yeah, I just thought of a question right now, actually. How do you see the implementation of AI-powered POCUS in communities that lack resources, like rural communities, northern communities? I mean, we were talking about not needing those ivory tower academic centers anymore to make, I guess, diagnoses. I'm assuming this type of technology would be super beneficial to communities that lack those resources.
Absolutely. I think that in those populations, AI could serve as another layer of expertise to ensure that the implementation is being done responsibly, that the interpretation is correct. And so similar to how automated, again, ECG reporting can augment clinicians' interpretation at the bedside, I think that in communities that lack that expertise, this will be a great augmented resources to give clinicians the confidence. Maybe they have done training, but they just might lack the confidence to implement it in the same fashion. And I think that this is the perfect technology to do that.
Amazing. Well, thank you both very much. On behalf of our hashtag health audience and myself, I want to thank you guys for taking time out of your schedule to be here. I've personally learned a lot, and I'm sure everyone listening will also really value this interview. So thank you again.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you all again for tuning into our second episode about AI in POCUS. Starting in episode 1, Dr. Arnfield and Dr. Prager shed some light into the applications of AI in POCUS and how this technology can help increase the efficiency of doctors. Followed by today's episode, where we dove a bit deeper into the obstacles around the implementation of AI in the healthcare system. The Hashtag Health team would like to thank Dr. Arnfield and Dr. Prager for taking time out of their busy schedules to join us on our podcast and share their knowledge in this field. We hope to have inspired some of our listeners to partake in innovation.